Donald on the Kitchen talks about food. Donald on the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald on the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
What a busy weekend in Central Iowa. There were lots of events. We've got lots to talk about here today.
It was the beginning of the season in Ames.
The season. Including good things to eat, good things to hear, good things to watch. There was so much going on.
Farmers markets.
And dancing.
Joy.
And KHOI had a big do last week, so we'll talk about that. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocer in Ames. Community-owned, community-focused since 1974. Open daily, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
We couldn't have had a better Saturday to sort of open the season,
oh,
as
yes,
you
wasn't
said.
It the iconic spring day?
Farmers Market started off with a real good bang. Yes, it did. There were a lot of things for sale there. There was North Grand Farmers Market opened.
I went to both.
And you went to both. Well, tell us what you found there, Donna.
Well, the downtown market had lots of new vendors, quite a lot of delicious food. I had my first local yokel hamburger of the year. I could hardly wait. It was breakfast, even. And then, oh, and Burgies has a new stunning coffee truck. Did you see that?
Isn't that the cutest thing?
You know what it is? It looks like it's an old milk truck. My dad used to have one of those. And the milk trucks only had one seat. And then, of course, they have doors that open on both sides. And I'm sure my mother didn't know this, but my father used to let us, little kids, 3 years, 4 years old, sit on the floor, and he would drive around with the doors open. It was adorable. And that truck with the coffee installation in it is so glorious. It's
yes.
Such a cute
and,
thing.
And it's kind of painted a cafe au lait color.
It is.
It was good.
It is. And then what else? Of course, there was a lot of asparagus. Well, not a lot, but the Boone asparagus guy was there. And I've bought my fill of asparagus for the week, and that is so, so yummy.
Yes, I want to mention that this time of year, plants are just starting to grow. Some wonderful growers have got greenhouses, and they're bringing wonderful things to the market. But you can run out of things if you come late. So,
yes, I, for example, who showed up about 10:30, completely missed Bruce Smith's stand. He had a lot of hothouse vegetables.
Right.
Season
extension things. He
yes.
had some lovely beets.
And
they kind of went, the beets sort of went like hotcakes,
yes.
as they say.
So the early bird gets the best food, and I will get down there earlier next time.
Yeah. Well, another thing that went on this weekend, all last week, and if you've tuned into KHOI, of course you know this. It was the great pledge week, asking for your money, asking for you to support this great radio station. This is community radio.
And a lot of fun was had by all.
And a lot of fun was had by – we had some fun on the radio, too. And on Saturday night, that's last Saturday, there was a – party here in the studio with all sorts of good entertainment, good food, and it was just kind
lots
of a
of
nice
music.
Gather.
Boy,
it was
oh
lots
boy.
Of music.
We are getting better and better at partying down here at KHOI. Yeah, yeah.
Practice. The evening started out with Ben Schrag, who is a singer-songwriter, and what a lovely voice he was here. And then we had a really fun talk on Iowa history from Katie Swalwell. And she's doing a project on civil rights in Iowa. And just to hear about that was
good. The history of it.
The history,
yeah.
History. And Wesley Martin, who is a DJ down here at the KHOI, is leaving. He's graduating and leaving and going on to great things, I think somewhere out west. And he gave a little presentation on pop music around the world, which I know not a whole lot about. But I have learned more listening to his program. And the evening ended up with some fine old-time fiddle and some commentary, but mainly some good fine old-time fiddle by Billy Kearney from Sheldahl. So it was a fun evening. And did I mention the food? The food was good, too. And as I understand it, we met and slightly exceeded our goal for fundraising.
Woohoo! Bravo.
Great.
And I forgot to mention the North Grand Mall.
Please, please.
The farmer's market was outside, and I was able to buy 3 varieties of shiso plants for my garden.
Oh, already?
Yes.
Oh, how nice.
Yes. Yes.
I know they're a very warm weather plant, so somebody was on the ball up there.
Oh, yeah. It's the woman, and I can't remember her name, but I bought from her last year.
Good.
The plants. And she says she doesn't even eat them, so I feel like she's growing them just for me. So do go out and get some shiso. She had the red, which we also call perilla from the Italian. Now, this is the Japanese shiso plant. And last summer, we had lots of it, and we made a beautiful pink beverage out of it. And then she has the green, which is the more traditional Japanese shiso, which you can eat just on its own or with rice or... It's kind of like the Japanese version of basil.
Yeah,
and then they had a Korean one, which we haven't quite figured out what to do with it yet. But I bought 1 Korean plant, so in case I learn more this summer.
Good. So it's always good to try a new plant or two. That's good. Also, back to the fundraising sort of update, remember we had the gelato drawing for any new members. And considering we're still reeling from the fundraising event, we haven't quite got our ducks in the row down here to figure out who exactly won that.
Oh, right. We have to have the drawing for the sour cream gelato with the hot dark chocolate fudge sauce.
So some lucky person who is a brand new member will be contacted and can come down here and pick up the prize as soon as we figure out who the heck that person was.
And you will let me know so I can make the gelato,
oh,
right?
Oh, that'll be good. Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll let
I've
you
got
know.
The ingredients ready.
It's
I'm
ready.
Prepared.
We're going to hit the ground running with that. Oh, another thing this weekend, we talked about it the weekend before, the Scottish ball was this weekend, and yes, there were men in kilts and good
woo-hoo,
food.
Woo-hoo.
So there we had, and it was very nice, and there was lovely music.
Dancing, men in kilts.
Yes, and that happens here, too, in Central Iowa. You wouldn't think of it. And there was an event in downtown Ames called the Healthy Street Event, where they closed off Main Street on, what was it?
Oh, Sunday, wasn't it? Sunday?
It was on Sunday, yes. Yes, all kinds of things going on down there. There was a Central Iowa Symphony concert, and there was something called the Ag Arts Potluck. Tell us about the Ag Arts Potluck.
Yeah, we had announced that it was coming up. So it's Ag Arts is a student organization at ISU, founded by kind of Mary Swander and Fred Kirschman, and it now has chapters spreading out all over the country. And it's to kind of celebrate the ways that artistic mediums, all kinds, talk about and promote sustainable and healthy organic agriculture. So it's kind of a celebration of our rural heritage, our rural present day. And I would say I considered the Donna Lana Show an ag arts adventure.
It is. It's using the arts to talk about food, farming, the kind of thing we do here, and the kind of people that come to Ag Arts are really interesting folks, and they always bring good food. Donna was kind of, at the last minute, encouraged to be the potluck taste tester and to give out a prize.
Yes, there were prizes for the best savory dish and the best dessert.
Oh, what did you pick?
I picked this charming beet salad, and I should have asked her more carefully what was in it, because the vinaigrette was beets and nuts and probably spinach, and I'm going to get this wrong, but whatever she made the vinaigrette out was quite delicious. And then there was a woman who went to the trouble of making a really delicious rum cake, which is not an easy thing to make with a different, it's had a chocolate filling, and it was fun.
So getting together to eat is a really fun thing to do. This is the 5th of May. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
So what is Cinco de Mayo anyway?
The 5th of May.
It is. Thank you. The date is observed to commemorate the Mexican army's unlikely victory over French forces at the Battle of Puebla on May 5th, 1862, and the victory is significant because it was a huge morale boost to the Mexican army. Although it wasn't a major strategic win overall, it was a small force defeating a large force.
Like the David and Goliath thing. But in Mexico, and other, like Los Angeles, for example, Cinco de Mayo, places where there are large Mexican communities, is celebrated much like the 4th of July here.
Yes, it is
lots of partying, yeah. Lots of margaritas, lots of mariachi bands.
Celebrate your heritage. It is not Mexico's Independence Day, which is actually a more important national holiday in Mexico. That is celebrated on September 16th, so a chance to party again. But this one was kind of a, like Donna said, David knocks down Goliath sort of thing. A good thing to celebrate, a strike against imperialism.
Yeah,
there you have it.
It's kind of a spring fling sort of thing. We love Mexican food. We're going to talk about some Mexican food today. One of my favorite cuisines.
Yes, Donna has spent time down in that neck of the woods. And
well, first of all, we have to remember that Mexican cuisine is very complex. It has regions. And the region I know the most is the Baja Peninsula, because when I was living in Los Angeles, I used to say the two best things about living in Los Angeles are the farmers markets there and the ability to get in the car and drive right over the border to Mexico. From where I was living, it was about 2 hours to the border. And the Baja Peninsula is that funny little narrow, well, it's not that narrow, but on the map it looks narrow, strip of land that is kind of the extension of the California coast. And then on one side is the Pacific Ocean, and on the other side is the Sea of Cortez. So the Sea of Cortez used to be kind of where the Rio Grande exited to the sea, but we've drained the Colorado and the rivers so much that they actually don't make it all the way to the Sea of Cortez. But it is a beautiful, much quieter side. So there's two, and the Baja Peninsula is desert, stark, stark desert, not high desert with some plants and rangy stuff. It's really desert with the big, you know, those big pokey cactuses that you used to see in the Western movies. And the air is so dry and so clear down there that one of the major international observatories is down there, because you can see the stars so well at night. I mean, you just can kind of lay back there on the desert rocks and look up at the sky and think, this is almost what the stars looked like millions of years ago.
Oh.
It's really, really beautiful down there.
Oh, feeling very small.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds good.
And it's so, the major road is kind of down the Pacific side, and then it crosses through the desert, and you can kind of go in a loop around towards the end of which is Cabo San Lucas, which is Cabo's a big resort town. So I actually never went there. I went to a little more esoteric fishing villages and stuff. But a lot of the Baja, if you drive down, first of all, you don't drive at night too much because the roads are really narrow. You could hit a cow. You could hit a huge pothole. So you kind of drive all day, and then you stop at some, you have to plan, because they're not towns everywhere. You know, you don't just want to stop any place. And then, of course, there's a wonderful amount of seafood. Like the first town south of Tijuana is called Ensenada. And the road between Ensenada and Tijuana is beautiful. It's really up, and that's a good highway. So you can get to Ensenada, no problem. It's a four-lane highway. All these funny signs, Peligroso, you know, dangerous curves and this kind of stuff. But it's the view of the Pacific all along that drive is just stunning. You're up on the cliffs, and it's wild. And there's lots and lots of seafood. So when you get to Ensenada, there's a beautiful port and, I mean, a really old-time fish market with, you know, it's open with a roof over it, and there are probably 30 stalls of different kinds of fish that the fishermen have brought in. And there's large slabs of smoked tuna, which is one of their specialties, and fresh shrimp. Like, once you eat the seafood there, you, like, don't want to eat shrimp anywhere else, because it really is sweet. It really tastes good. So there's shrimp and scallops and oysters and lots of all kinds of white fish, and the specialty right next to the fish market, with the pelicans swooping down all over the place trying to, you know, pick up, and the seals barking right there in the harbor. It's really, really fun. And it's a great place for sport fishermen. A lot of people go there, and surfing. just all along the Baja coast, there's quite a lot of surfing. Right next to the fish market are another 35 or 40 taco stands, all making sort of the same things, but everything is a little different because the mamacita probably has her own recipe. And a fish taco, which is what I'm going to make at home tonight, is they use these little corn tortillas, which they heat up, and then they have whatever kind of white fish is in, and it's, you know, breaded and deep fried, and you put that in it. Or you can have shrimp tacos, or you can have all, you know, more elaborate things. But the basic taco is, so they give you the tortilla, the corn tortilla, with the fish in it, and then all the condiments are on the table. So there's several kinds of salsas, some of which are very, very hot. And then there's radishes and carrots that you eat with it. This is on every table. A big bowl of cilantro, little squeezes of lime, and then something they called crema, which is kind of like a loose, watered-down mayonnaise a little bit, so it kind of dribbles on to the fish taco, and then chopped cabbage and cilantro, not mixed together. So you can kind of create your own taco, and they are delicious. You drive down the border, you go straight to the fish market, you sit down at your favorite taqueria, and you have a big dark beer with it, and or else some Fanta. There's lots of soda down there. And then as many fish tacos as you can stuff in your mouth. They
Ever
also
so
have
good.
Plates of oysters they'll open up for you. They have another thing called cocktailis, which is a – they take these kind of old soda glasses, and they fill them up with cooked, like, baby shrimp and baby octopus and all kinds of little seafood yummy things that – and then it's in a – kind of a tomato, but not thick tomato base with lots of lime juice.
Oh, so you, hot?
Cold.
Oh, good.
Cold. So you kind of drink it and kind of eat it, and it's delicious. The other thing is, as you're driving along the coast, there's another thing you can get. It's a, what is the word for clam? I can't remember in Spanish. Anyway, it's ahumado, which is smoked. So they have it, they give you the package wrapped up in tinfoil because it's been in the fire, and it's this big clam on the inside with some really nice seasoning, and it's slightly smoked. These are just wonderful local delicacies.
Ooh. This past weekend, I went to the Central Iowa Symphony Concert, and it was called the Cowboys of the Americas Concert, and the music was lovely because it was provided by a band called Los Llaneros, which refers to the Great Plains of South America. There's a lot of areas that have cowboys, gauchos, people on horses rounding up all the cattle. Here's a tune from Mexico from that group.
Azteca está de luto, se murió su apanguero. Ya no se oye aquel falsete que era el alma del trovero. Rogaciano se llamaba, Rogaciano el huapanguero. Eran sones de la sierra, las canciones del trovero. La Azucena y la Cecilia lloran, lloran sin consuelo. Malagueña salerosa, ya se fue su pregonero. Comienza la molienda.
We're back. You're listening to KHOI, Community Radio for the Heart of Iowa. That was music by Los Llaneros, and that was music from Mexico. The tune is called Rogocino. How's that? I don't know what it translates into. Maybe it means fish tacos. I don't know. But that's what we were talking about. And Donna's going to talk more about food from the Mexican area because she likes it a whole lot. And she's
really
got some great recipe
food.
Books here.
Well, the other thing I forgot to mention is at the fish market with all the taco vendors, and they all have these brightly colored little tables. It's a permanent structure, you know, with a roof over it and a couple of stories. I mean, there are probably, I wouldn't say 40 mamacitas. They're each a little family business. And then, of course, there are the mariachi bands. So it's like a couple of somewhat toothless, seedy guys with big black hats walking around with their violin and huge guitar. And, of course, they're there for lots of tourists, right? So they will come and serenade you. And it's all part of the ambiance, which is so, so Mexican, or at least Baja. Now, Mexico has a lot of different cuisines. It's quite complex, but the Baja is the one I know the best. But all of South America has different cuisines. It's a whole South and Central America. It's a whole continent and the in-betweens here. So Americans know Mexican food, I think, the best of the South American cuisines. In fact, I believe that salsa has replaced ketchup as the number one American condiments seller.
Well, that is news. That's good.
Yeah,
I love salsa.
And even the last time I was in Paris, there were multiple Mexican restaurants there.
It's taken over the world. All for the better.
And Diana, my daughter in New Zealand, of course, has found every Mexican restaurant on the island because she loves Mexican food. She's a California girl. So it really has become quite the international rage, and for good reason.
So when we talk about America, let's remember that America goes from pole to pole. There's a whole lot of
the Americas,
yes. The Americas. And we have a lot of wonderful things to share with each other.
Well, I'm going to talk about my favorite Mexican cookbook today, which is called Mesa Mexicana. It's Mary Sue Milken and Susan Finiger, who are the Border Grill Girls from Los Angeles, two restaurant ladies whom I just adore. If you need a cookbook, because sometimes you mostly really don't, because you can make tacos and quesadillas kind of your own way. Like last summer, I did a whole week of nothing but Mexican food, and everybody in the house was thrilled. It's as easy as just taking, Wheatsfield has Stacy's whole wheat tortillas, which I love, and everybody has their favorite, whether it's corn or wheat or white flour or whole wheat flour, whatever. You take your tortilla, and I just turn the gas on my stove and throw it on the fire and kind of flip it till it gets just a little char on it.
It warms up. Nicer if you warm them up a little bit.
Yeah.
Make them poof a little bit.
Yeah. And then I have also on a different burner been heating up my cast iron skillet. So then I throw the tortilla into there. I pour in a spoonful of any kind of salsa that you want, green, red, hot, not hot, whatever, and some kind of cheddar-y cheese. Now, if it's for the kids, that's it for the, you know, you just let it warm up a little bit, fold it in half, because you keep the cheese and the salsa on one half, so you flip it over, and it's kind of like the grilled cheese sandwich of Mexico, a favorite with children. For the adults, I also like to throw in, and enlighten children who will eat it, vegetables of, spinach, certainly cilantro. You can add little bits of cooked chicken, little bits of fried pork, or that's where you put in the cooked fish. And then you kind of fold that in half and let it cook together and bring it to the dinner table where those condiments are. Now, some of my favorite condiments are, of course, more salsa, the chopped cabbage, finely chopped cabbage, and the crema, which is really mayonnaise with a little water and maybe lime juice in it. Another thing, this is right out of the Mesa Mexicana, but it's an onion relish, which is quite beautiful if you use red onions. This is so easy. You just finely chop, and I make them in slivers, so they're kind of long rather than a small dice. Red onion, two smaller, one large red onion. And then you take a serrano chili or a jalapeno, and you can just de-seed it and chop it in. Or because if you take the seeds out, it's not as hot. And I would recommend actually wearing rubber gloves for that, because otherwise your hands are they're a little hot for a while. And, mm-hmm. And heaven forbid if you should rub your eye.
Don't rub your eye.
No.
You learn these kitchen skills. If you've done it once, you won't do it again.
And you can also, if you want to, turn that gas heater back on and actually lay the chilies on the fire and kind of blister them a little bit before you chop them up and put them in. That adds another. So anyway, you've got your chilies and your onions. You put in a half a cup of red wine vinegar and 3/4 teaspoon of salt. And all you do is let that sit for at least a half an hour and kind of marinate. And then the fire from the onions is tempered by the vinegar. And it's a wonderful relish to serve with. And of course, there's guacamole. In any kind of guacamole, the basics are, of course, smash the guacamole.
No, smash the avocado.
Thank you.
Guacamole translator. You know, it's like chicken and
yes,
eggs.
Yes, right.
Chicken and
you
eggs.
You smash the avocado, and it kind of must have some kind of acid. My preference is use either fresh lime or fresh lemon. Salt, and then you can begin to put in with whatever you want. If you want cilantro, onions, corn, a few fresh tomatoes, and anything you want. So if you have, and when tomato comes, you do have fresh tomato salsa, which is wonderful.
That's worth waiting for. It's like waiting for watermelons or waiting for the first tomato. Fresh tomato salsa.
Salsa is just the Spanish word for sauce. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of kinds of sauce. And then we're just talking about food in the Baja. If you go into Mexico proper, there's whole cuisines where they make mole, which are incredible mixtures of spices pounded together, and many, many kinds of mole. We tend to think mostly of the one that has chocolate in it, because, of course, it's delicious. Mm-hmm. But there are lots and lots of kinds of moles. It's a very complex tradition, really.
Yes.
I think Diane Kennedy's books on Mexican food she was kind of the original gringo to venture down there and really document what was going on, and she's quite the authority. Then she was followed by Rick Bayless, a Midwestern fellow who has multiple restaurants in Chicago, and he has a few books. But I really enjoy the Border Grill books,
Grill.
That's, again, Mary Sue Milken and Susan Finnegar. They are from Los Angeles, but they're very playful.
Oh, good.
And they're actually a joy to be around. They're old friends of mine, but their work and their restaurants are it's very lighthearted and not serious. You know, the way a cookbook can make you crazy.
Oh, share another recipe with us. That's
well, I was going to talk about beverages and what you drink in Mexico, because of course it's hot, it's dry and hot down there. So of course, margaritas. That's the famous thing. And of course, beer, lots of beer. And they put lime. They will serve you the bottle of beer in the beer with the little lime kind of attached to the lip of it. And you're supposed to squeeze it into the beer. Sangria is another Mexican thing, white or red. And then Mexican hot chocolate. Mexican chocolate is different from American chocolate in that it's a kind of you can buy it everywhere down there, but it comes in sold in hard kind of round cakes. And it's essentially they've ground the cocoa beans with sugar, and it usually has a pinch of cinnamon-ish into it and sometimes a little almond.
Oh, my. Okay. So it's like buying a little hard candy bar.
Kind of. You can eat it like that, but lots of times they use it to dissolve it in either hot water or hot milk for mm-hmm. Mexican hot chocolate, and also can have a little chili in it.
Ah.
So it's sweet, but it still has a little chili in it. The other things that we drink, we talked about horchata.
Oh, which now this is a new one to me.
Horchata. And it's a cold beverage served with ice. It's like thin milk, basically. So how they make it is they take one part of non-fat milk to two parts of water and four cinnamon sticks and a fourth cup of rice flour or a third cup of raw white rice crushed into a powder in the blender, and 3/4 cup of sugar and 1 tablespoon of vanilla extract. So this is all mixed together and served over ice. And really, it's quite delicious.
You don't cook this or anything. It's just this is a cold drink, or you cook this ahead of time?
No, you don't cook it. But the rice has to be powdered and kind of dissolves as a little thickener into the milk. Now, I did notice there's a new product called horchata in those like quart-size aseptic things, and it's in the almond milk or rice milk section.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I bought some, and it's close. It was a little sweet for my taste, so I actually added, it's a non-dairy one, so I actually added some skim milk to it and poured some ice into it, and it was good. It was very good. Did the horchata have it for me.
Oh.
So I highly recommend that. They also do a thing called agua frescas, are... like my favorite one is when it's watermelon season, you either buy the seedless or else you have to take the seeds out, but you put some watermelon and lime juice and ice in the blender, whoop it up and pour it out. And it's really, really, really good.
Oh, I think that would taste like summer, wouldn't it? Oh,
it does. It does. The other thing they make are, tamarind water. Like it's, the recipe here is, 1.5 pounds of dried tamarind pods. Oh, pulp. You can buy tamarind pulp.
Tamarinds are fruit.
It's a fruit. It looks like a... It's like this long, maybe 6-inch pod that grows on a tree. And it has these big seeds in the middle and this kind of gooey stuff around it with a little slight thin shell over it. So you can buy the pods almost in any grocery store in Mexico. And it's a very sour, loaded with vitamin C, very sour kind of thing. It's used a lot in Mexican food. It's used a lot in Indian food. I make a wonderful tamarind barbecue sauce out of it, too. I recommend exploring tamarind. Indian stores usually have it in little jars or cans.
Yes, it's kind of a little... Black molasses-looking stuff.
Even thicker than molasses.
Black stuff.
Yeah, but if you dilute it with water and add some sugar and ice, that's also really, really delicious.
So the recipe for that
is, let's see. Well, it's the pulp, 1 gallon of water, and 1 cup of sugar.
There you have it. And some ice cubes. I like ice cubes, yeah.
So they're full of good ideas. They also do this thing with... raw coconuts, you know, you'll go down there and they will on the spot cut the hole in the top of the coconut, give you a straw to drink the juice, and then once you've had the juice out of it, then they crack it open for you and they serve it with salt, lime juice, and chili powder, and it's delicious.
Now, isn't that good? It's the kind of thing you don't normally think of in Iowa, but to the south of where we are right now. There sounds like they're eating pretty darn well.
That's the thing I think why people love Mexican food. It's full of fresh food, fruits and vegetables, and it's very lively. Cantaloupe, too, is another thing you'll see also with the lime juice, mm-hmm. the salt, and the chili mm-hmm. served mm-hmm. on it. It's mm-hmm. delicious that way.
Mm-hmm. And does the cuisine have room for pork and beef and that sort of
thing? Oh, yeah. Tacos, lots of tacos can have pork or beef, or there's carne asada. Now, in the Baja, the cows are, you know, there's not a lot to free range them on there. So, but they do. They have good beef there. It's just very, very, it's tough. You know, like really grass-fed beef can be because it's range-fed. So they have a way of doing it where they marinate the beef and then they chop it really fine into thin strips. And then they kind of throw it on the grill and grill it up and stick it into the taco. And since it's been marinated, it has this particular asada flavor. And then they serve that with like grilled onions and peppers and... Carne asada is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
We're talking about red meat, which leads to cowboys again. The band Los Llaneros has a song here, and this tune is from Colombia. It was written by the group's leader, whose name is Karen Stein. You wouldn't think, but there's a lot of people.
It's true. There was a huge infusion of Germans into Mexico and all over Central America.
Right.
And that's what put all of those brass horn sections into Mexican music. That's from the German influence.
With the Tex-Mex and the
Absolutely.
Mex.
Absolutely.
Yes. And Karen Stein is a wonderful musician. She's from Colombia. She's actually spent a little time in Iowa, too, so I've gotten to know her over the years. She has played in a group called Cale Sur. But she grew up and is native to Colombia. And she grew up on a ranch, a farm, in a huge, huge spread. It sounds like out in the prairie, but it's not called the prairie there. It's called Los Llaneros. And here's one that she wrote called Macape. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You're listening to KHOI. If you have things you want to say about food, about anything in Central Iowa, you can contact us here at KHOIRadio@gmail.com. You can talk to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Do you have suggestions, ideas, food thoughts? Anyway, thanks for your support. Thank you for your support during the KHOI fundraiser. If you haven't donated yet, go to khoifm.org. We won't turn away anything that you want to send our way, and send us your thoughts, ideas, and suggestions too. We're back in the studio. My name's Lana Noctical. We're here with Donna Prescintis, and she's talking about the good food of Mexico, the Baja Peninsula specifically.
Yes, I'm just practically drooling here because this is one of my favorite subjects. So we didn't get to the desserts yet.
Ah.
So one thing that happens when you go down into the Baja, there are multiple places. I think it's called Michoacán Paletas. So paletas are basically what we would think of as an ice cream bar. But there are lots of there's fruit flavored ones and milk based ones too. So they've just got them all like piled up in their little freezers, and you pick the flavors, and I always have to have the chocolate one.
Oh.
And usually sometimes they're covered in peanuts because they have used lots of peanuts down there.
Oh, is the chocolate kind of that, the Mexican chocolate
yes.
taste? Oh,
yes.
Oh, with something, not just chocolate, with a little extra.
Right. It's a lighter chocolate, very, well, it also has the cinnamon and the almond in it. And it's not spicy. It's just that it's sweet ice cream. So the Mexicans are big on paletas, at least in the Baja. And the other thing sweet that's very much in Mexico is Kahlua, which we all know very well. It's their kind of national coffee liqueur, so that's widely available. Mm-hmm. And I must say it makes a delicious adult drink.
Mm-hmm.
Kahlua and milk? Kahlua and cream, but milk is...
It's good.
Yeah, because I'm kind of a guzzler, so... You know, if you make it with cream, it's really, really rich. And then the other dessert that I love down there is called cajita. And it's sort of like, say, the dulce de leche from Chile or something. But it's really, you take milk and you boil it and boil it and boil it until it turns into this thick caramel. But the cajita in Mexico is made from goat's milk.
Oh,
it's really yummy.
So it's a custardy.
No, it's more like a caramel syrup.
Ooh.
And they make candies out of it.
Oh.
Or you can put the cajeta on your ice cream. Or like I did when I did the carrot cake recipe, I put the cajeta in the frosting with cream cheese.
Yes.
You know, it's their kind of caramel. And also their other notorious dessert is flans.
Oh, flans. I've actually made a flan. I didn't know that was Mexican. That's a Mexican thing.
Uh-huh.
Oh, very good. Explain what a flan is. Now,
kind of a baked egg custard, basically.
That's the custard I was thinking of.
With a caramel. You put some sugar in a pan and with a tiny bit of water, I think, and basically melt it till it's almost burned and it's liquid, and then you pour it in the bottom of whatever ramekin or something that you're going to put the flan in, and then you put the flan over it and bake it. I think that's how it works,
It's kind of like an upside-down pudding, because you take it out, you turn it upside down, and then the pretty, pretty covering is on the top.
Yeah. Oh, a present has just arrived. I have no idea what
nice.
This is.
Oh, look at this.
What is this? Oh, thank yous. Thank yous for helping the KHOI pledge drive a success.
And it was a success. Thank you to all you folks who sent in all your donations and your good wishes. We get by here on community radio with your help. So
come on down and make your own show, folks. This is a platform for all of us to make complete fools out of ourselves.
Yes.
In public. Over the airwaves.
Oh, but never when we're talking about food, because everybody loves food. Flan. I like flan. It's a good thing.
Yes, so the Mexicans do the sweets quite well.
That's wonderful. So we wish a happy Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo.
To everybody out there. Actually, it's a very good chance to kind of welcome in spring and welcome in summer with all those good foods and dancing. And
you know,
music.
And if you don't feel like cooking your own Mexican food tonight, we actually have several quite decent Mexican restaurants in town, where I'm sure there will be parties tonight. So
let's go out and celebrate.
Do the Mexican thing tonight.
Yes.
They are our good neighbors.
All good neighbors. This is the community. This is community radio. And it's spring. Donna mentioned the farmers markets are up and running, and we're going to be able to get lots of greens from the market, but you can wild forage for some things, too. I have a poem here, and it's about foraging a little bit and welcoming spring through your palate. The author is named David Budbill, and he's writing from Vermont. And the poem is called The First Green of Spring. Out walking in the swamp, picking cowslip, marsh marigold, this sweet first green of spring. Now sautéed in a pan, melting into a deeper green than they ever were alive, this green, this life, harbinger of things to come. Now we sit at the table munching on this message from the dawn which says, we and the world are alive again today, and this is the world's birthday. And even though we know we are growing old, we are dying, we will never be young again, we also know we're still right here, now, today, and oh my, don't these greens taste good.
Oh, yum for the spring greens. The things that we can pick wild, like the dandelions, and actually even the asparagus, that's part of your internal spring cleaning.
It is.
They just go inside and they brighten up your innards and put back that vitality into you.
And even earlier in the spring, even drinking the sap from maple trees, even if you don't get around to making making syrup out of it. That was a spring tonic for many years.
Do it's becoming an item in the natural foods marketplace?
What?
Maple water.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah, I saw a lot of it at the natural foods show. It's packaged, bottled, aseptic packaging, bottles. You will probably be seeing it in the local, well, at least in Weedsville, maybe even at Hy-Vee in their natural market section. Well, it's the latest fad. Maple water.
The stuff right out of the tree, it just makes you feel good. Now, we've passed the season for that, but think of early spring. After all, it has a tiny, tiny bit of the tree's sugars in it.
It also has minerals in it.
All kinds of minerals. Because just think what happens when those trees wake up in the spring. They're giant pumps. They're pumping up to the ground, and they're pumping back and down and up and down. There's magic going on out there.
It's kind of like coconut water.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's very light, it's very hydrating, mm-hmm. and not too sweet, but just, it really is refreshing.
Well, food is a pretty important topic. Now, we seem to get advice from all sorts of people. Donna ran across a article about how we can tell if food is good for you. There's all sorts of people telling us
what to eat, you'll hear a story in the news all the time. This one was titled, and I diligently read them to see how ridiculous we can be. This one was titled, Five Foods We Thought Were Bad For Us Now Turn Out to Be Good. And I actually agreed with this writer because, of course, I have very pronounced opinions about nutrition, having watched this field grow and change and mutate. So the five things he says that we have done nutritional flip-flops on are, of course, eggs. Now, there was the time when people were told, eggs give you cholesterol. I've always been, bah humbug. It is the most perfect piece of protein in the percentages that the human body needs of amino acids. It is a perfect protein. So eggs, it turns out, of course, as we knew, are quite good for you. The second thing that he talks about has been in the media for eons is saturated fat or red meat.
Oh, that's a big, big topic.
Oh, there. I know. Oh. Well, obviously, and I also agree with what he said, and this is true, grass-fed meats turn out to have a fatty acid profile that are not only not bad for you, they're quite good for you.
Because I understand that they're, well, it's a lot more complicated than this, but there are good fats for you, and there are not so good fats
for
you.
Yeah, yeah, and this is one of the things they keep changing. But saturated fats are not good for you.
Okay.
So it turns out that they're wondering, well, that maybe saturated fat isn't so bad for you. It turns out that the current thing is thinking is that processed meats like bacon are clearly not good for you.
Or there's a lot of hot dogs and salamis and actually
heavily processed
and
meats.
And be careful about
how the
stuff is processed and what is added to the meat.
Read the labels.
Things are complicated.
You know, if it has to have a label of ingredients, you know things have happened to it. So we kind of need to go a little easy on our favorite food, bacon. But don't cut it out completely. Who could live without bacon except vegetarians?
But what about butter?
Butter is the next on his list. Now, this is an old, old, ongoing argument, and I have to say, I grew up in a dairy family, right? So margarine was always and eternally a dirty word.
Of course. We
never touched the stuff. We always ate butter. So when everybody was eating margarine instead of butter, I was, bah humbug, we are going to eat the butter.
Well, yes, it could turn into a very political argument.
Yeah.
Who were you supporting, actually? And this was back in the 50s. I mean, this is not recently.
60s, 50s, for
60s,
sure.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I mean, I can remember, I'll tell a little celebrity story. When I was working for Warren Beatty, Benecol was happening. It was a margarine product that was supposed to be cholesterol reducing. Now, of course, you can't tell your client who's somebody a big deal like Warren Beatty. So I actually had to buy his Benecol for him, and he used it instead of butter. It was horrific. But anyway, people get into those things. Of course, now it turns out, and I'm not sure about Benecol, but it turns out that of course margarine is really not good for you. Better to eat your butter,
right?
And better yet, to eat your grass-fed butter. So the next thing that was on his list of five, this was number four, was coffee.
Oh, now, here I'll get my hackles up on this a little bit.
Yeah.
I do like my coffee.
Well, the current thinking, and I repeat current, is that one or two cups of coffee is good for you, especially one cup a day, and that it has antioxidants in it. It's if you overdo it.
Oh, as in overdo, like what, 3, 5, 10?
Oh, probably anything past 2.
Oh, all right. I can do that.
Yeah, right. So, and then I would put red wine in that category also. Red wine is, people say, oh, yes, a little is good. Well, it's a little is good for you. You know, the whole French paradox. Well, I'm not so sure, but a little, because it has resveratrol and all of that.
Back to coffee. What about decaffeinated coffee? Don't they have to do something kind of nasty to decaffeinate the coffee? I don't know.
I think there are multiple methods for decaffeination, and you need to, what is the word? There's one that's not so bad. I can't remember what it is.
We'll look that up and get back to you.
Yes. The fifth thing that he has on his list were avocados.
People
thought they were fattening.
All things. Avocados. Oh, for goodness sakes.
Well, obviously, they're quite good for you.
How many avocados do you have to eat to be fat on avocados?
Well, he says, eat as much guacamole as your heart's desire. And I would second that.
Oh,
especially today.
Especially today for Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, the article he talks really about how do we get all these kind of wild swings in what's good and what's bad. And he said there are two reasons. First of all, the journalists give a cursory reading of the scientific journal and kind of take off from there. But I think, and this is true and becoming more and more true, a lot of the scientific studies, as we know in this culture, can be funded with companies that have vested interests. And this is very true in the food and nutrition world. You know, so if the milk board does a study on how good milk is for you, kind of, not that the findings are false, but you have to realize, okay, who paid for this study?
Yes, yes.
Is very important to know when you're judging the veracity and the validity of the nutrition information. And as I always say, we know how to send a man to the moon, but we still have not quite figured out what is going on the very inside of us in our innards. So we think we're sophisticated, but there's a lot we still don't know about digestion, and especially human digestion.
Right. So all of these.
So eat good food.
Yeah. All of this
enjoy
stuff.
It.
And enjoy it. And take advice with another food metaphor here.
A grain of salt.
Yes, there we go.
Which has also turned out to be important for you and another one of the maligned foods.
Oh.
Well, salt is an important part of our body chemistry and does have some important functions in the body. So salt is okay now.
It's nice to know that we're really complicated. I like that part. We'll go out with another bit of music from the Americas. This is from Venezuela. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Happy Cinco de Mayo. Donna, can you mention those recipe books that you liked?
Oh, yes. It's The Border Grill Girls. They may have multiple books. This one's called Mesa Mexicana, Mary Sue Milliken and Susan Finnegar.
Oh, very good. Happy Cinco de Mayo. This is Lana Noctigal.
And Donna Prisgintas.
With excellent engineering by Rick Morrison. This is KHOI. Eat good food and enjoy life.
Gavilán primito, oye primito pequeño y muy volador. Y ese gavilán primito, oye primito pequeño y muy volador, que se remonta a lo alto para visitar al bicho. Piu piu piu, gavilán, tau tau tau, gavilán. Piu piu piu, gavilán, tau tau tau. Yeah. águila en la montaña y en el estero el carrao, y en la sabana del llano el gavilán colorao. Pío, 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 tau, 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 pío, 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 tau, tau, tau.